Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. My name is Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. The title of our podcast today is Secret Recipe, The Life and Death of Colonel Harlan Sanders.
Yeah, it is bullshit, and you know it, Timmy.
We're going to take a look at the life of Colonel Sanders. Of course, Colonel Sanders is famous for founding Kentucky Fried Chicken, but he was kind of a badass, Brandy.
Spectacular.
He was a very complex man. We're going to talk about his life.
He had sweet facial hair. Sweet facial hair.
But before we do, let me introduce our panel. But let me also remind you of a couple of things. First of all, we are a true crime history comedy podcast, and we use adult language. So if adult language offends you, then we would suggest that you check out one of the other fine podcasts that are out there, including Insight and They Walk Among Us, two of the best podcasts out there. And if you like comedy podcasts, we encourage you to check out Squirm. It's excellent.
Bloody Murder is good, too.
Bloody Murder is well. There's a lot of good podcasts out there. So let me introduce our panel. I am pleased to be joined, as always, by the very lovely and talented, a lady who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you, Brandy?
Well, Timmy, I got to tell you, I'm a little sore today, first of all. No, not like that.
You're sore as a
man. You're the man, Dave. You're the man.
No. I went to trampoline park the other day.
Hold on.
No. You're gross.
You went to the booby bouncer?
Yeah. We went to the trampoline park with the kids. Because we were in Lexington.
I would have driven for that, devil. I would have driven.
She was in
that.
A bouncy castle.
It was not a bouncy castle.
Did you take your shoes off?
It was a trampoline park. I did. You had to put on the special socks.
Right. Bunch of hillbillies jumping up and down. All right.
You had to put on special socks, you dick.
No,
special socks.
Half of our listeners are hillbillies, the other half are Brits. So you just offended.
No, okay. Well,
I can still do a flip on the trampoline. I just want that shit noted.
Why?
Yeah,
your boobies didn't hit you in the face.
No, they did not.
Why? What was so special about the socks?
They had little grippers on. They're like hospital socks.
Oh, okay.
So they just make it so you don't slip on the trampolines.
Okay.
It does not stop you from falling down.
Well, that's my point.
No, it does not.
It's kind of a risky endeavor. Anyway,
it was risky. It was risky, but you know.
So, did you enjoy yourself? I mean,
I did. It was a lot of fun. I went with both my brothers and all the kids, and we had a good time.
I'm glad that you had a good time, Brandy. And
I don't think you give a shit if I had a good time, but I did.
I'm glad that you had a good time at the bouncy castle.
It was fun. Yeah. It was. I had a good time, but God, my legs and my back are so sore. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm sorry. And I guess that you will not be engaging in your performing your marital duties anytime soon.
I don't know. Dave's working, so probably not tonight.
Okay.
So it was like just bouncing up and down.
That's what you do on a trampoline. You bounce up and down.
Do you have a sports bra on?
No, I was ill-prepared to be on the trampoline, so I probably shouldn't have been, but it was a lot of fun. So
any video anywhere?
Nope.
Damn.
I'd also like to introduce a man of great esteem, a man who has been described as the moral compass of not only our podcast, but podcasting in general.
No. Not ever.
A man who is considered an oasis in the desert of despair.
No.
The very honorable, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawkwaters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Well, I'm not too goddamn good, Timmy.
I understand you have a beef.
I got a couple beefs, first of all.
Okay.
First of all, when you said we were going to do a show about the Colonel, I mean, the Colonel is like Madonna. You say the Colonel, and you
well,
think
there's more than Colonel. One Colonel.
There's more than one Madonna, too, but there's only one Madonna and one Colonel. There's a lot of princes out there in the world.
So you really,
but you say Prince, who are you thinking about?
You right? really thought that we were going to do a podcast about your life?
Well, why wouldn't you?
Well, isn't it's kind of fucked up. We have to wait till he dies.
Isn't
but
every podcast we do about his life?
You already know that.
And I just want to note it for the record. He was a bogus colonel.
Okay. Well, no, he wasn't. He was named colonel by the governor of Kentucky.
Honorary colonel. He's not a Cajun colonel, Timmy. There's a big difference.
I didn't know you came up through the ranks.
Yeah, I started as a Cajun private.
I see.
And I'm a Cajun colonel now.
Okay, well, try not to.
This guy just got the shit handed to him. He didn't have to fight no bears, alligators, nothing.
He was kind of badass, though.
He might have been bad. I don't care. They just handed him the title. And what this whole secret recipe shit. You know, I'll tell you this. My mama made better fried chicken. She didn't lock her recipe up in some kind of Lloyd's or London vault and Fort Knox and whatnot.
Was it all in her head?
It was all in her head. Yeah, she made better fried chicken than the Colonel.
And then she died. And now you don't get the fried chicken.
Well, I never liked fried chicken.
Did you get a chicken tattoo when your mom passed away?
I did not.
Seems like you should have.
I should have.
Seems like you should have.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just. I don't like Colonel Sanders. That's all I'm going to say. I like him, but he's not. When we have the meetings.
I'm betting that the Colonel Sanders does not give a shit if you like him
when
or not.
When we have the meeting of the colonels.
He's laughing all the way to the bank with his fucking secret recipe chicken.
Basically, he is the Ted Cruz of colonels.
Well, yeah, he actually is dead now, but.
Yeah, he was not respected by the other colonels. That's all I'm saying.
Did you ever see him at the meetings?
Well, we used to mock him openly.
Okay.
We'd be like, oh, yeah, we'd eat turkey sandwiches and stuff. Because he was always coming. You know, you bring it's like a potluck at the colonel meetings.
Is it?
You know, and you bring your own dish. And then
so you have colonel meetings?
Oh, yeah. There's colonel meetings.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. It's like DweebCon. It's ColonelCon.
You know what it is? It's Chuck sitting in the middle of all these empty chairs. Playing all the different colonels.
With a turkey breast sandwich.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right.
We didn't bring no damn chicken. No,
I got something.
All right.
So I'm driving into work this morning.
There's not a chance of hell we're going to get to this story anytime soon.
Shut the hell. This is interesting.
All right.
So, and I want you guys' opinion on this. So I'm driving into work this morning, and they're talking about there is this new thing that has come out that's a capsule, and a woman sticks it in her vagina.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, sticks it in her vagina.
Yeah,
and at
in my day we called those penises, but
well, this is a capsule.
In my day we called a birth control those foam things you see.
Okay, this
in
is
there.
Still a capsule. Neither okay. one of those.
A so diaphragm.
This is a capsule. The sponge.
A dildo.
Anyway, and as the capsule dissolves,
milk beds.
Good and plenty.
Do you want to get to this or not, please motherfucker?
Please continue.
So anyway, as the capsule dissolves, then your hoo-ha tastes like cotton candy or whatever. And
I want to, first of all, I want to know
it
has,
and the stuff that
there
comes,
was not a damn bit of difference between a pink and a white Good and Plenty.
No, not a bit. Not a bit.
Noted.
Okay.
So and, first of all, so it makes your hoo-ha taste like cotton candy or whatever the hell. Mm-hmm. And all of the juices that come out of there makes them glitter.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah, so if somebody goes like downtown Julie Brown on mm-hmm. you, then they come up looking like Ziggy Stardust.
But let me tell you, all that glitters is not gold.
No, it is not.
Sometimes but, it's vajayjay.
Yeah,
what if you don't like cotton? Do they have broccoli flavor?
I don't think they have broccoli flavor. I think it's just one flavor. I mean, you know, they may have bubble gum.
It
I'm
just
not
seems
sure.
like they should expand that out because
It's a new product.
Okay, but
nobody,
the marketing people, I just want
that you know is going to do this because it's extremely dangerous.
I beg to differ. I might.
Well, you might.
No, but who likes cotton candy?
I like the flavor.
Little
kids
like cotton candy at the circus. How many little kids are out there performing cunnilingus? None. They should make pizza flavored.
Scotch.
Beer flavored. I mean, if they make pizza flavored, Skyline chili flavored.
They have to start somewhere.
I want a hoo-ha to taste like Skyline chili. I'd be
on
that sumbitch all day.
It smells like your vapey stuff.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so strawberries
there's a whole
even.
Lot going on.
Like strawberry shortcake. You make strawberry shortcake
yeah, but
cake
if you,
vagina.
If you're with a woman that, you know, whatever, and all of a sudden you look down and your dick's all sparkled, would you not have some kind of...
Well, first of all,
does your dick not sparkle?
I was going to say, first of all, let's not assume that that isn't the case anyway.
Mine's glittery.
First, shut up.
Has like a little halo over it.
You're married and you dip your shit in some shady fucking places that glitter is not seen ever unless it's on the stripper pole.
They call mine the magic crystal.
Nobody calls it that.
He does. He just did.
At the Colonel meetings.
At the Colonel meetings. Me all right. My magic crystal.
Why would you do that?
Do what?
Why would you want your shit to be sparkly and...
Well,
it's so
dangerous. To change
dangerous.
It up, because in that way, you know, Renee thinks it's somebody
different.
Well, I mean,
you may get repeat customers otherwise.
It's not you. You don't stick... No. Renee, what does Renee give a shit if it's sparkly and smells good?
Because the thing, women will want repeat business down there.
Yeah.
So they want to add a little flavor. There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, there ain't nothing worse than going down there and getting hit with the chicken of the sea scent.
I mean,
You're down there and a cat's clawing at your ear trying to get to the thing.
Get that.
You know, you have not seen the commercial of the two women walking along the beach holding hands saying, "Mom, sometimes I get that not so fresh decaying vagina feeling."
Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I just think they should have vagina flavored candy.
Depends on the vagina, really.
Well, yeah.
Because they're not all the surprisingly
all vaginas do not taste the same.
They do not. No. They do not. No. 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 There's a variance that's like the spectrum of the rainbow, devil.
Well,
rainbow vagina,
and you can get glitter.
And you can get glitter.
You know what they need to do is have them, they can put it in their anus.
Nope.
And then when it comes out, let me tell you why. Because if you get a woman and you're doing doggy style, doing doggy style, and you've probably had this experience, Colonel. You're a man of the world.
I am.
And you're doing doggy style, and she's not
fresh.
I'm
so grossed out by this right now.
She's not fresh back there.
Why are you with her?
Well, sometimes they don't know.
They
and
don't
it's,
know.
It's, awkward, it's an awkward conversation to have. But if you're ever in that position, it can be a turnoff. So I agree that they should have these. What's these things called?
I don't know.
I believe. I think what you are asking for is a wash rag and a cork, Timmy.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're after.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's an odor.
You know,
that
you could just sprinkle some ice cream jimmies on there and be done with it.
It's the same problem you have, really, with the reverse cowgirl. It's the same problem.
What's the problem with the reverse cowgirl?
Well, you're going to be exposed to...
buttocks?
Yeah.
Well, then that's why I don't know about you, Timmy.
I'm so weirded out by this right now.
You don't carry some Febreze with you?
I'm going to start.
I do.
Yeah.
Because there ain't nothing... I mean...
I was afraid the girl might be insulted if I use
Febreze. Picking up strange that doesn't wash her ass. Let's solve that problem.
Oh, it doesn't happen a lot. I'm just saying occasionally you'll meet someone.
I'm saying occasionally you need to really reevaluate your life choices.
You know, and sometimes because this is what I don't get. Women will say, "Oh, I shaved my legs for him," but they didn't hit that thing with a shot of Febreze for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It takes you 20 minutes to shave your legs. It only takes 5 seconds to hit that thing with a shot of Febreze.
And you think your junk and your taint are all like posies and sunshine down there?
I've never had a problem with it. It smells like a fucking
boy's locker room all the time.
Well, first of all,
don't disparage us. Yeah.
We're
hygienic men.
We are very hygienic men. We're at the hygienic
I took a shower this morning.
Uh, And I collaborative. We're part of the Hygienic Men Collaborative.
And I spent a lot of time washing my genitalia. But this
I
morning.
Did. But I well, you know, sometimes I learn something from you guys, and I did learn something this morning. That you were telling me that if you get because I've had headaches now, so I'm probably stage four brain cancer.
Sure, clearly.
But one of the bright sides is I learned from you guys today that if I get chemo, it will remove all my pubic hair, so I don't have to worry about it.
You don't
that.
Have to manscape at all, Timmy.
There you go. You got that to look forward to.
It's a silver lining.
It is. It is a bit of a silver lining. However, you don't have stage four breast cancer or brain cancer, and you really need to get off WebMD.
I have a headache.
Yeah. You need to get your eyes checked. Motherfucker.
I got an appointment. I don't have an appointment. It's a walk-in, but it's okay.
Wait a minute. So you have a walk-in. What day do you have this walk-in?
The 11th.
The 11th. So he's planned his walk-in for the 11th. So it's really not a walk-in. Why not make the appointment?
Because they don't give appointments. They say you just walk in.
Are you going to the free clinic?
No, I'm going sometimes to pick up women.
But I know. That have nasty asses.
You know the best place to pick up a woman is at the STD clinic.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know they're getting their junk all taken care of. It's like, hey, I'm going to get with you in about a week, right?
Yeah. Okay, so where are you going to get your eyes checked?
At a eye place.
And you have this planned for the 11th.
Eyes are Ross?
You're going to walk in.
Monday, yes. I'm going to walk in Monday. I guarantee you I will do that.
I think you're a liar, but okay.
All right, but anyway, let's get to our Patreon shout-outs real quick. We would like to thank all of you who support our podcast on Patreon. We really appreciate it. And not only do we appreciate your generous donations, but we also appreciate the fact that you care so much about the program and all about us that you would use your hard or earn money to support us. And we thank you very much. If you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or...
Or just a wee little bit to me.
Brandy, you got our shout-outs for us.
I do. We have Daniel and Kimberly Bassett, Jim Moyer, David Hill, Tommy Lane, Jason Dykes, Shelly Garrett, Bridget Clavey, Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, Lorna Violet, Andrea Odell, Janilyn, Michael Deo, Jim Seabright,
Deo,
Russ Charlotte, Karen Widner, Callie Jones, Joseph Kerr, Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, Mike Brown, Sarah Bloom, Amber Krupp, Joe Hopkins of the Now American History podcast, Becky Omlett, Karen Alden, Cheryl Pierce, Caitlin Campbell, Fiona Crisp, Laura O'Reilly, Christine Bourgeois, Donna Curran, Maja, Aaron, Kimberly Cameron, Elise, Diane Student of the History Goes Bump podcast, Amber Trevino, Annette Petre, Lise, Leslie Hagar, Amber Scoville, Jahara, Alicia and Chip, Jeff and Don Chestnut, Andrew Happ, Karen Barnes, Rachel Flynn, Holly Woodward, Shirley Strapp, Todd Long, Lydia, Tyrone, Phyllis Munson, Sarah Morgan, Melissa Montoya, Brittany Martin, Jennifer Siemens, Cindy Liu, Heather Poole, the cast of Canadian True Crime.
Great podcast.
Christy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie and Allie from the Insight podcast. Nene, Bridget Bernhard, the cast of They Walk Among Us.
One of the best podcasts anywhere.
In the world. They got Rosanna and Ben.
Yes. Stacy, Christine Hauer, Cheryl Weldon, Sue Story, and the world's most dangerous canine, Rudy the Wonder Dog.
Yeah, and apparently we may have mispronounced Janilyn's.
I got it.
Yeah, I know. But that was my fault because I wrote it down wrong. So my apologies to Janilyn.
I got to tell you, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
We just, speaking of Rudy the Wonder Dog, and, you know, people always often send me PMs and say, you know, I feel like you don't talk about Rudy enough on the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I don't think people do that.
They don't at all, actually.
Yesterday I had to, and this is what a wretched woman my wife is, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
It's July 4th, right?
Yes.
We're getting ready for the
Independence Day.
Yeah, on Independence Day. And she tells me, oh, yeah, by the way, we're switching cable providers.
Okay.
I was like, okay.
You know, that's kind of a big deal.
And she made that decision magnanimously.
Or
unilaterally or whatever the word is.
Because she is the breadwinner in the home.
You know, it ain't like I'm you know, destitute to me. But anyway, so she says, you know, she makes these decisions. I'm like, fine with it. I don't care. You know, as long as I hit the remote and something comes on TV. And she said, well, to change it on internet, to change it on phone. I said, okay. She says, fiber optic, it's good, blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, that's fine with me, dear. And she says, they'll be here tomorrow at 8. And I'm like, okay. I just need you to meet them. That's how much notice I got to me. I got the night before.
Give you like an 8-hour window or something?
No, they gave me a 1-hour window, but it was a 4-hour installation.
For what? What were you getting installed?
Jesus Christ. Fiber optic stuff.
4 hours?
Yeah, they got to do all the wiring and everything.
That takes a long time.
Good Lord.
So anyway, Rudy tried to eat the cable guy when he came in.
Oh.
Rudy doesn't like the cable guy. But then once he got used to the cable guy.
Was his name Larry?
Hmm?
Was his name Larry?
No, I got Terry, his brother.
Okay.
Once he got used to the cable guy, he kept running his toys back and forth to the cable guy.
Okay.
And wanting the cable guy to play with
his
toys.
So Rudy has absolutely no loyalty to you.
It just took the installation much longer because the guy didn't take the toy from Rudy and then toss it across the room, and Rudy'd run and go grab the toy, and he'd run right back. And I was like, Rudy, get your ass up here. Let him do his job. I got to get to work.
Yeah. Well, you could have played with Rudy.
I did play with Rudy.
All right.
But he wanted to play with the cable guy.
No loyalty.
Can I make one suggestion? Can we talk about Colonel Sanders?
I would love to talk about Colonel Sanders.
Wonderful.
He's a bitch if you ask me, but go ahead.
Nobody asked you.
Harlan Sanders was born on September 9th, Brandy, 1890, in the farm community of Henryville, Indiana. It was a town truism, Brandy, that a man didn't bother to buy a suit until he needed one for either his wedding, and he didn't need to wear it again until the day they put him in his coffin.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah. In 1895, when Harlan was just 5 years old, his father, Wilbur, like that name?
They got some fucked up names in that family.
I bet Wilbur was hung like a whore.
Like a pig?
Wilbur.
You know a pig.
I mean, it was a horse.
Wilbur. Yeah.
Wilbur was also a pig.
Pigs got those corkscrew peckers. You ever seen those?
Yeah.
That's disturbing to me.
Wow.
His father, Wilbur, closed his butcher shop early and stumbled home in the middle of the day, feverish and ill. Within days, he would wear his suit for the second time. Like that little dramatic.
It's amazing.
He died, in other words.
I got it.
All right. Harlan was raised by his mother, Margaret, who was a strict Christian, who constantly warned her children of the evils of alcohol, tobacco, gambling, and whistling on Sundays.
Oh, Maggie was not a whistler.
By the age of 7, Harlan was routinely expected to cook for his younger siblings while his mother was away at work. At age 12, he dropped out of school, Brandy, never to return.
Nah.
Harlan did?
Harlan did.
Harlan did. He was so damn ignorant. We always wondered about that at the colonel meetings because he was kind of a dumb man.
His mother, Margaret, remarried, and her new husband expressed resentment of the children's existence. He expressed it by slapping them around for any perceived slight. Sort of like what Brandy does to us, Colonel.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Except he probably was more rational about it.
13-year-old Harlan put after one such incident, 13-year-old Harlan put his few belongings in a box, crept into the kitchen, snuck out the back door, and set out on his own. 13 years old.
He put it in a box. He didn't put it in a little handkerchief with a stick.
No, because you know what happens to you then?
Then you're a hobo?
Hobo rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing funny about no hobo rape.
So 13 years old, he's already out on his own here in 1903, Colonel. 3 years later, in 1906, he found work as a streetcar conductor, Brandy. Wait,
that's how long it took him to find work?
Well, he probably did a little of this, a little of that. But he found steady employment as a streetcar conductor in New Albany, Indiana. I don't know how you feel about a 16-year-old streetcar conductor, but okay.
It seems like a little risky there. But then if you can drive a car, why can't you drive a streetcar?
Well, when he was 16, and so he's working as a streetcar conductor, and he struck a conversation with two men on a streetcar regarding brandy, the ongoing troubles in the country of Cuba.
Oh.
It turns out that these two men were army recruiters.
Oh.
So by the time that they arrived at their stop, they had convinced young Harlan that the army was the place for him. He promptly quit his job as a streetcar conductor and enlisted in the U.S. Army and was dispatched to a ship loaded with men and mules bound to Cuba.
Men and mules.
Men and mules. See, that don't sound like a good combination.
I bet the army wouldn't have let him have that sweet, sweet facial hair.
Yeah, I bet they did.
No, his earlier pictures of him, he looks weird without his beard. Mm. We'll post some of them on our Facebook page. Before boarding the ship, Harlan was concerned about the voyage because he had never even seen the ocean before, let alone...
So the smart thing to do was to enlist in, what, the Navy?
No, he was in the Army, but they were shipping him over, you know, down to Cuba by boat. He spent the ocean crossing at the ship's rail, alternating between vomiting on each side of the ship. So he'd vomit on one side of the ship, then he'd go to the other side and vomit over there.
We used to make fun of him for that. He used to do that at the meetings, too.
It's because it's a sinking ship, is what you guys have.
When Harlan's commanding officer in Cuba discovered his new recruit was just 16 years old, he discharged the boy and put him on a boat back to the United States, thus ending the future colonel's military career.
He got screwed.
Well, yeah. I'm surprised they did that, actually.
He got kicked out of the Navy.
Army,
whatever.
It's hard to do.
Thank you for your service, though.
Thank you,
clearly. No, fuck him. He lied to get in there, puked on the boat. I mean, what'd he do? He lied to get in there and puked on a bunch of donkeys. Why we keep trying to build this man up? Huh?
In the early 1900s, you seem a little bitter there, Colonel.
Because he's not a real colonel, goddammit.
In the early 1900s, many young men were...
I'd be careful casting that stone.
Many young men in the early 1900s. Many young men aspired to be railroad engineers. Brandy. This was also true of young Harlan.
Well, he was a streetcar driver. Why not be a railroad?
Well,
engineer?
Harlan's sixth grade education didn't qualify him.
I can't imagine that.
Didn't qualify him to be a colonel either, and it still made him a colonel.
To be a railroad engineer, so he kind of took a backwards approach. He found work working on the railroads as an ash doodler.
Oh yeah, they're like three steps below Gandhi dances.
Yeah, he was an ash doodler, Brandy. You got to be careful when you're an ash doodler.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be careful doodling those ashes. He got a job as an ash doodler for the Southern Railroad, scrapping coal ash from the steam engines. But he studied closely the railroad firemen and the engineers, watching their every move, Colonel, and learning how to spread fuel for maximum efficiency. So he's got a little business sense to him, our young Harlan.
Yeah, sure.
He was an ash doodler, Brandy.
Those just aren't on every street corner.
Well,
take
you
skill.
Can't find an ash, good ash doodle anymore.
I think Timmy likes a good ash doodle every once in a while.
An ash doodle or an ash doodler, I will never be.
Whatever.
I do not approve of the dirty flower for any use other than what it's intended.
What?
But how God intended it.
You were the one wanting to shove glitter up there a few minutes ago.
Well, that's just for hygiene's sake.
Again, I think we need to
should
reevaluate.
Like those little things like you put in, you know, when you're doing laundry, those little balls.
Pods?
Yeah, they put a little pod back there and just, you know, it would absorb and make it fresh smelling.
You really need to evaluate some of your life choices.
Yeah.
At age 18, Harlan began filling in for the fireman who failed to show up for work on the railroad. He also adopted the fireman's lexicon, Brandy, expanding his vocabulary to include many, many profanities.
Well, he was a foul-mouthed man.
With the exception of his filthy language.
He was like the devil.
Sanders was obsessed with cleanliness. So he was a very clean man, Brandy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He adopted the unusual practice of dressing himself in white overalls and white cotton gloves, Brandy. He claimed that he often went home spotless despite working amid coal all day.
Well,
you know, I do not believe that someone is working amongst coal all day after dressed in all white. First of all, he was, and everybody knows because we used to talk about this at the meeting.
You have a lot of animosity towards.
No, he was sissified, Timmy.
No. He was badass. Let me continue.
But you do not work in a coal mine all day in all white and
not
come
in a
home
coal
spotless.
Mine. He worked on a train.
Or in a coal train, wherever he was.
Are you paying attention at all?
No.
He doesn't deserve my attention. He's a fake colonel.
I mean, you're
colonel.
Sitting there with your arms crossed and you're pouting.
He's a fake colonel. We're doing
He's
this
not a
about,
fake colonel.
Do you know what my life... We could be doing this about the colonel's life, but now we're doing it about the fake colonel's life. And I'm just... How would you feel if we did one about a fake Timmy or about a fake Brandy or a fake devil?
It was around this time that Harlan met his beloved Josephine. Oh. Brandy.
She was ugly.
Josephine King.
Was she?
No, mm-hmm. She was quite an attractive young lady.
No, everybody knows she was ugly.
They both were regular customers at the same moving picture show, Brandy.
All righty.
Theater. They went there. After a brief, shy courtship, they decided to marry. Their daughter, Margaret, named after Harlan's mother, was born roughly 40 weeks after their wedding night.
Well.
So they timed that pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
But that would have been conceived, but so she was a whore. Josephine
no,
was a whore.
She was not.
No, she wasn't. They did it on their wedding night.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe that.
Probably with the lights off. You know, he was a clean man.
He was a clean man.
Yeah. Throughout his life, Harlan Sanders had a quick temper, Brandy, that would often lead to altercations, costing him more than one job. Sanders worked for various railroads over the years.
Various what?
Railroads over the years. But his days as a professional fireman were over when he and an engineer were found fighting under a railroad water tower. Sanders was fired and essentially then Brandy blackballed from working on the railroads all the livelong day.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Did he become a hobo after that?
No. He was 21, Colonel. And he began to take a law correspondence course. He studied in a judge's office in Little Rock. Eventually, he found work as a justice of the peace, Brandy.
Yeah.
Hoping to bring justice to some long-abused poor people in the region.
Ah. Oh, so now he's going to try to be Wyatt Earp.
Now he's got a cause.
Yeah.
He was particularly proud of the time when he was able to negotiate better settlements for the mostly African-American victims of a train wreck. Because he got a fight for the poor and downtrodden, and he got a fight against the railroads, which he despised at this point.
Did he advertise on the sides of buses?
No, but he ended up winning a big settlement for the defendant.
Was he a lawyer?
For the,
Did he end up being a lawyer?
Yes.
So, unlike you... Colonel Sanders passed the bar.
He took this shit through a correspondence course.
But his
and passed the bar.
But Brandy, his days as a justice...
He was a bootleg lawyer.
Can I please finish? His days as a justice of the peace were soon over.
No.
Because he was a coward.
When him and his client were found brawling in a courtroom, evidently over unpaid legal fees.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but that's, you know, there's a code of ethics and you can't beat up your clients. It's a thing.
Is that why you didn't become a lawyer?
You probably can't fuck him either, and that's why he didn't become a lawyer. Yeah.
Harlan Sanders also spent some years as an independent
There's
business
a code of ethics for lawyers?
As an independent...
isn't that an oxymoron?
As an independent business owner, launching several ventures with varying degrees of success. He lost most of his money trying to sell an indoor lining system. Lighting system.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's never going to catch on.
No. It's voodoo.
What was based on this type of gas. I don't know. It didn't catch on. But
caught fire.
He did earn a small fortune when he established a much needed steamboat ferry crossing the river at Jeffersonville, Indiana. So
nice.
He used his profits to establish the Young Businessmen's Club in Jeffersonville, Indiana.
Was it a titty bar?
No, it was a place where young businessmen could get together and discuss business.
Same question. Yeah. I still pose that question.
He didn't know shit about business.
Was it a titty bar?
One fine Saturday afternoon, Brandy.
It was.
The club declared that all of the businesses in town would be closed for a picnic in the park.
All right.
So this is like kind of like, I guess, like a Chamber of Commerce type of deal.
Uh-huh.
They put out signs announcing the picnic the prior day. Inside a Jeffersonville barbershop, a customer was enjoying a hot shave when a surly Sanders... surly-shaped silhouette.
What?
He's painting us a picture.
A surly Sanders-shaped silhouette.
Come on, Hemingway. Let's get this.
Darken the doorway.
Bum bum bum.
Murder.
Sanders told the barber, "Hey, we agreed that all the stores were going to close today." This picnic was a fundraiser. Okay, so they wanted all the businesses to close, and they were going to raise funds for his poor family. But this barber wasn't playing ball.
Well, he didn't have to close. He didn't want to close. That barber's got to eat.
Apparently, the other barbers in town were nervous about losing their customers to the lone holdout. So, Colonel Sanders went into the barbershop and told the guy, he put up a closed sign on the guy's door. The barber took exception to that.
Yeah.
And said, "I'm not closing."
Sanders is a bit of a dick.
The foamy customer in a chair. He had shaving cream on.
No, I got it. I didn't think it was rabbit or anything.
Had Alka-Seltzer.
He became upset that Sanders was interrupting his shave.
I would be too. He probably paid a whole nickel for that shit.
And he told him to leave. Sanders, in return, challenged him to walk outside, and the customer then shot from the chair and squared off with Sanders in the street.
Now it's a fundraiser.
Sanders punched the lathered, covered man, whose face was half shaven.
Was Sanders a big man? Was he a big guy or a little guy?
5'10", I think.
So no, okay.
Unfortunately, Sanders' brand new straw hat, one that he had bought specially for the picnic, was trampled on in the commotion.
Son of a bitch!
Well, that's what you get. You go in a barber shop, stunting shit.
The police intervened, but they failed to arrest Harlan.
They should have thrown his ass in jail.
Did they arrest the foamy guy?
No, they didn't arrest anyone. Nevertheless, the picnic was reportedly to be a success, Brandon.
Not for the foamy guy. He only got
attendees even collected money to replace Harlan's damaged hat.
Ah, it's bullshit.
So he had a little bit of a temper.
But he seemed to be liked in the community.
He was. He was always doing things for people who were less fortunate. In the late 1920s, the Sanders family was living in Camp Nelson, Kentucky, and Harlan supported his family by working as a salesman with the Michelin Tire Company. Brandy.
Michelin.
Yes.
Okay.
His commissions were sufficient that he was able to buy a top-of-the-line Maxwell automobile. I don't know what that is, but...
All right, top-of-the-line.
Yeah. Nice ride?
Oh, it was smooth, Timmy. Smooth. Had to crank them in the front.
The car was a beauty, Brandy.
Oh, well.
With varnished wood-spoked wheels, nickel trim, and a revolutionary... new straight six engine under the hood. So I'm guessing you had to crank that one, Colonel. This is he had a new ride.
You said trim, Timmy.
Yeah, I did. On the morning of November 6, 1926, Sanders was tying a rope from the back of his Maxwell to the front of the family's other car, a Ford Model T1, Colonel.
Had to crank that son of a bitch.
Yeah, the Model T wasn't running very well, especially in the cold. And sometimes it had to be pole started to get the engine to turn over. Here's a funny story for you, Colonel.
I doubt it.
My uncle, one time, he was having some problems with the starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to get a shove, you know, just so he could get it to turn over. And this lady, so he asked this lady if she could, you know, give him a shove.
Mm-hmm.
With her car. And he said, now you're going to have to get it going about 30 miles an hour for this thing to crank over.
Oh, no. I can see where this is headed, Timmy.
So this lady's driving down the street. She goes around the block, and she's driving 30 miles an hour. He had to get in between her and the car to get her to stop. She was going to hit it 30 miles an hour.
Timmy, one time I was something similar. I was coming home from a baseball game, and I was playing summer ball for this. It was an amateur team.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine asked me to play on the team, and it was an 18 and over team.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only 15. And I was also the only I was a distinct minority on the team, Timmy.
Okay.
And the coach was this big guy, and I don't know, he reminded me of Boilermaker on the Bad News Bears. I don't know who would ever give this guy, you know, a baseball team to coach. He's probably about 350 pounds, mm-hmm. never ever had his shoes all the way on, stepped on the back of him all the time, had this crappy car that he used to take us around in games. One day the car broke out. Now, you know Straight Street up here in Clifton?
Yes.
His car broke down. He had to get it down. He wanted to get it down to Straight Street. Now, I'm only 15 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
He asked me if I can drive a car. Of course I can drive a car, Timmy. So he tells me he's going to push it. We're going to get around the corner and just let it coast down on Straight Street. Well, we got straight. You know how steep it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to go on pretty good, and I got to go on faster than he could push. So here he is, all 350 pounds of him.
He fall
chasing the car, Timmy, telling me slow down, slow down, slow down.
And you're just coasting.
Yeah, I was probably going about 10 miles an hour. He's screaming, so I just slammed on the brakes because I knew, you know, I could just let off the brakes and coast down the rest of it. But I slammed on the brakes, but he couldn't stop his 350 pound ass.
So he ran into the car?
So he slammed into the back of the car. And then I let go of the brakes. And he just slid down. Laid in the street. Yeah. And I cruised down to the bottom of the street, hit the brakes, stopped the car, got out, and watched him get up off the ground and walk down, cussing at me the whole time.
What do you think of that, Brandy?
Joe Cocker died.
No, that's not what I asked you. What do you think about his story?
I wasn't listening.
Okay.
Joe Cocker died?
No.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Joe Cocker died?
Yes.
It's
on CNN, so it's official.
Okay. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, not Joe Cocker.
Joe Cocker. Yes, he was so beautiful.
Well,
to me.
Well,
yeah, he always clarified that in that song. That was kind of insulting, wasn't it?
So beautiful.
Yeah.
You gotta put your hand behind
your
neck. I
got it up here. I can't you
behind
see?
Behind your neck. Behind your neck.
Please stop.
Everything I hope for. Everything.
No, that's too bad.
Please stop.
I do like Joe Cocker. That's too bad.
Everybody loved Joe Cocker.
Mm-hmm. He sung at
Mad Dogs and English.
Up where we belong, right? And he sang that song.
Yes, he helped. Yes,
he also did "Get By With a Little Help from My Friends" much better than the Beatles did.
Okay, yes. back to Colonel Sanders, who's also dead. On his anyway, he's pulling his he's in his new Maxwell. He's pulling the Model T along behind him with a rope, right?
Nothing can go wrong.
Sanders' 18-year-old son, Harlan Jr., took the wheel of the Model T, and Sanders Sr., Harlan, was towing him across this bridge. Now, this was a swinging bridge, Brandy.
So, by swinging, you have a swing, Devil? You and Dave have a swing?
No.
You have a thought about it?
No.
You'd probably be popular there.
Oh, of course I would be.
Yeah.
It was a swinging bridge.
Look at me.
And Dave with those suspenders, you know.
He would not be as popular.
Well, Dave would actually have to talk to people to be.
Yeah, which is why we are not swingers.
Yeah. I'm sorry, continue, Timmy.
Thank you.
Girl. I digress.
It was a swinging bridge designed for horse-drawn carriages.
Not two cars.
Not cars.
So what happened?
So Sanders and his son are taking these cars over this swinging bridge. And as they crossed it, the weight got too heavy for the bridge, and the bridge collapsed. The entire bridge collapsed, dumping father and son and the family who was in the automobiles. I mean, it looks like you get your family out and let them walk across the bridge, but, you know, they didn't think this through, obviously. So the bridge collapsed. They fall into this gully, and two cars land.
Did they go 40 feet down?
Yeah, it's 40 feet. They land upside down.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, not worse than landing upside down. I mean, the 40-foot drop would have been okay if you would have landed on your feet like a cat.
Or right side up.
Or on your tires.
Yeah.
Crushing the flimsy canvas roofs of the cars. The younger Sanders was able to free himself. He wiggled out from under the Model T, somehow escaping with only minor cuts and a contusion. The senior Sanders, Harlan, crawled out of the top of his car, fractured, bruised, mud-caked, and bloodied, Brandy.
Sure.
The two walked back to the house while neighbors gawked.
Where's the family?
They got the family out.
Okay.
And then they all walked to the edge of this gully. And once they arrived home, Josephine helped her husband sew a loose flap of scalp back where it belonged. So
yeah.
He busted up his head. And then she doused the wounds with turpentine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That hurts. Harlan, that's better than Mercurochrome stuff your mama used to use, though.
Oh.
Harlan survived the accident, but now he was lacking an automobile, and he was soon out of work. Harlan next found work managing a Standard Oil station, Colonel, in nearby Nicholasville, Kentucky.
I know where that is.
Okay. He made 2 cents profits per gallon of gasoline. And he also sold farm equipment on the side. But, Brandy.
What?
There was a severe drought descended upon Kentucky in the late 1920s, ravaging crops and livelihoods.
Who goes in and ravages crops?
Gasoline demand. Gasoline demand declined, Brandy.
Well, yeah, there wasn't that many cars.
And customers defaulted on their credit.
All the cars was falling into the gully.
Then the Wall Street crash of 1929 smothered what little hope they had for recovery.
Oh. You know, Wall Street never crashed. I mean, the buildings was there. The streets was there. The stocks caught. Why don't they stay the great stock collapse? This crash of this. Because Wall Street's still there.
That's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Who gives a shit?
Harlan.
You're a little bitter today, ain't you, Devil?
Harlan contacted some acquaintances at the Shell Oil Company and used his reputation to lease a new location where fuel demand was higher. They gave him a little station, Brandy, in the town of Corbin, Kentucky.
Yeah, see, that's not much better than Nicholasville.
I've been down to Corbin
a few times.
My sister-in-law's from Corbin.
But it was near the busy U.S. Route 25.
Oh, U.S.
25. Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Bob, yeah.
The area was known as Hell's Half Acre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of bootlegging going on around there. And what would happen, we'll talk about this in few minutes, but what would happen was there was so much competition because this Route 25 ran through there. The gas stations were, you know, they would do anything to outdo each other.
Right.
And one of the big things was painting over each other's signs.
Oh.
And that resulted, it results in an altercation a little bit later on we'll talk about.
I bet.
One night in the wee hours of the morning, Harlan was jolted awake by multiple gunshots, Brandy. Two rival alcohol bootleggers were exchanging bullets and insults in the road in front of Sanders' place. The shootout was interrupted by the sound of a door crashing open from the nearby service station. A middle-aged man stood outside the door wearing nothing but his underwear, Brandy, aiming a large shotgun in their direction. "Line them up, both of you sons of a bitches, and I'll throw down your guns," Sanders ordered. Being called a son of a bitch was no trifling insult, Brandy.
Ah, fellows. Not a trifling insult.
But the shotgun convinced them to comply.
Right.
So he was kind of a badass. You don't fuck with Harlan.
No.
He's a real colonel.
He was not a goddamn real colonel. He's a fake colonel that Kentucky... What I mean, what Kentucky got?
So anyway, I want to get off his story. When the sheriff arrived to arrest the suspects, the two guys and bootleggers, he asked Sanders to come back to the county seat with him to serve as a witness. As he sped away, Sanders' daughter, Margaret, could be heard running, clutching a pair of...
pearls?
A pair of breeches, screaming, "Father, you forgot your pants." So he forgot his pants, Brandy.
That sucks.
One day in early 1930s, Josephine and young Margaret were waiting for their father and beginning to wonder what was keeping him so long. Last they saw of him, he was riding a mule up the mountain in a downpour, carrying an old lard bucket, Brandy, filled with bandages, scissors, antiseptics, and rubber gloves.
Sounds like a party.
Harlan was en route to a nearby Appalachian community which lacked electricity, roads, indoor plumbing, and other modern conveniences. From time to time, Sanders brought the families there food, including full Thanksgiving spreads for entire towns. But most urgently, he would go there when people needed medical help. He became summoned that day because one of the townswomen had gone into labor. Now, having three children himself, Sanders had a little experience with childbirth, so he became a self-styled amateur midwife, Brandy.
That you know, I don't know if that's one of those things you can really do.
No, I've done it on the fly before.
But this outing was taking a little bit longer than normal. Finally, Harlan interrupted his wife and daughter worrying when he burst through the apartment and grabbed his trusty shotgun that he kept behind the door. He explained it might be necessary to use a little persuasion, Brandy.
On the baby?
Well, no, Brandy's going to tell us what happens next.
Most people use forceps.
Well, the baby wasn't in the proper position in the womb, so I don't know if he thought he was going to force him to change his position with a shotgun or what, but it required more experienced intervention. But the allegedly drunken doctor was refusing to go. Shortly, the doctor was appropriately persuaded, and he was seen riding up the mountain astride a wet mule.
So
a wet mule.
That's how Timmy goes on his dates.
So Colonel Sanders took a gun and forced the doctor, who was
Drunk.
Okay. I thought he was going to point it at the baby and say, crawl your ass out of there.
The doctor manually adjusted the baby's position, and the delivery proceeded smoothly. The parents named their new son Harland.
Oh,
years later, in 1936, in recognition of Sanders' midwifery work, food donations, and his regular shuttling of townsfolk to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, there you go, Kentucky Governor Ruby Laffoon commissioned Harland Sanders as a Kentucky colonel, the highest title of honor bestowed by the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
See, Colonel, that's how you become a colonel. You go out and you become a midwife.
Drive people to their AA meetings.
Exactly. You don't do none of that.
No. You know why? Because it's my... What was he doing? Was he teaching them how to fish? No. He was giving them fish.
I didn't hear anything about fish in that story.
He was up there spreading around food instead of showing them how to grow crops, which I have done. I did that. And
I don't think you've done that.
I have done that. I've gone to Kansas, shown them how to change the soy.
Let Brandy proceed.
Yeah. Let's see. In Corbin, the only thing Sanders seemed to enjoy more than swearing was experimenting with cooking. He decided to put a big oak table in a former storeroom and reopen as Sanders Service Station and Cafe.
Now, that sounds tasty. If I saw a sign, Sanders Service Station and Cafe, I'm stopping for a tank of gas and a little grub.
Sweet.
I stayed one time at Edna's Service Station Cafe and Motel.
Oh, yeah.
My whole baseball team.
All right.
Okay.
Six guys to a room.
All right.
And each of us got body lice in my room.
Spectacular. Mm-hmm. Hungry travelers were drawn in by the big advertisement Sanders painted on roadside barns north and south of town. Sanders hired some servers, and he made a point to pay them a living wage and strictly forbid them from accepting tips. Using the kitchen in the apartment and back, Harlan and Josephine cooked up such fare as steak, country ham, potatoes, and red-eyed gravy, grits, and hot biscuits.
Mmm, that sounds tasty, Colonel.
I love me some hot biscuits.
Chicken was not often on the menu. It took too long to cook to Sanders' satisfaction, but he experimented with it consistently. Competition for business was tough in this area known as Hell's Acre. And business owners would go to great lengths to steal each other's business, including painting over roadside signs, which were the main source of advertisement. On May 7th, 1931, it was a hot and dusty day in the mountain town of Corbin, Kentucky. Alongside a dirt road, a service station manager named Matt Stewart stood on a ladder painting a cement railroad wall. His application of a fresh coat of paint was gradually obscuring the sign that had been painted there previously, an ad for Sanders filling stations. Stewart paused when he heard an automobile approaching at high speed, or what counted for high speed in 1931. It was coming from the north, from the swath of backcountry known amongst locals as Hell's Half Acre. The area was so named for its primary exports, bootleg booze, bullets, and bodies.
Hmm.
The neighborhood was also commonly referred to as the asshole of creation. People in Kentucky have a way with words.
They do.
The poets.
Stewart probably squinted through the dust at the approaching car. He probably wiped sweat from his brow with the back of a paint-flecked wrist. But you didn't know that, so you're just guessing and making shit up.
A little speculation there. That is what we call artistic license.
I believe you're novelizing, Timmy.
I am.
Is this a novel? Are we reading a novel loosely based on a fake colonel's life here? Is that what we're doing?
Right here.
I'm trying to paint a picture.
He probably knew that the driver would be armed, angry, and about to skid to a stop nearby. Stewart.
Well, he's painting over the man's sign.
Well, Stewart
He's a sign repainter.
He's a vandalizer.
Fucking sign repainter.
Sign repaint, motherfucker.
So Stewart set down his paintbrush and picked up his pistol. The car skidded to a stop nearby, as we knew he probably would. But it was not an armed man that emerged. It was three armed men.
So the colonel brought him some reinforcements.
Well, you son of a bitch, the driver shouted at the painter. I see you done it again. The driver of the car was Harlan Sanders, and he'd been using this particular railroad wall to advertise his service station in town. And this was not the first time that the painter, the manager of a competing station, had installed an ad blocker.
Hey, Colonel, that
was the first ad blocker.
That's not cool.
No, that's not cool. Well, I mean, the colonel got to show up with three other guys. I mean, that's kind of cowardly. Two other guys. Can't handle him mano a mano.
No, you got to go big or go home.
Stewart leapt from his ladder, firing his pistol wildly as he dove for cover behind the railroad wall.
So they're having a shootout.
And he hit one of them. Mm. As he's diving off this fucking ladder, he hits one of them. The driver picked up his fallen comrade's pistol and returned fire. Amid a hail of bullets from his pair of adversaries, the painter finally shouted, "Don't shoot, Sanders, you're killing me." The dusty roadside shootout fell silent. And indeed, the former painter was bleeding from his shoulder and hip. The man recovered from his wounds and no charges were filed. People took care of their own problems in this area of the country. The sign was never painted over again.
And you have to do what you have to do, Colonel.
Well, sometime a colonel got to do what he got to do, but he wasn't a real colonel.
He was badass. He was badass.
It was no, a real colonel would have... now, see, here's how a real colonel would have handled that. First of all, we wouldn't have taken no gun. Even if the other guy had a gun, he wouldn't have taken two other people with him. You would have taken yourself a knife. You would have gone and jabbed him a couple of times real hard. Even while he was shooting at you, you would have just continued to walk. And then you would have jabbed him a couple times, and you would have written the name of your business in his blood on that railroad wall.
Okay.
He wasn't no colonel. Okay. He gives the rank of colonel a bad name. Continue. It disgraces all colonels.
Please continue, Brandy.
I'm just waiting for him to quit.
I know.
Dripping.
He doesn't realize that we've got 10 more pages to go.
Why are you making so long? What could be so interesting about this?
It was
old
around
bastard?
This time that Claudia, or I'm sorry, that Sanders met his beloved Claudia Price, a young divorced woman who lived in Corbin.
Oh, this doesn't sound good.
He was a whore master.
At Harlan's suggestion, his wife Josephine hired Claudia to help around the cafe, and it soon became something of an open secret that Claudia was equal parts mistress and waitress.
So he was getting some of that.
Mm-hmm. But this silent scandal was marginalized by the growing success of the restaurant. Sanders added a small luxury motel to the property in 1937, the first one east of the Mississippi.
Motel added to it.
Yeah, because he had Josephine was working the front desk and he's banging this girl
in the
back.
You know, if you wanted to shut the fuck up, quit prompting him.
Well, he was talking before that he went to Edna's gas station and chicken parlor and motel.
Who hires
Edna's gas and lube?
That's like banging the nanny.
All right.
Well, yeah, but you know, sometimes you have a hot nanny.
Sanders.
You know what? I'll tell you about hot nanny. only because.
Well, it wasn't Fran, what's her name? She wasn't a hot nanny. I like her, but I didn't like her voice.
I know somebody.
Fran Dreschler.
And I'm not going to name them publicly on this show because she knows who she is.
Oh, yeah.
She's got a relative. I'm not going to say she's a relative or not, but she got a really pretty nanny.
Yeah.
Really pretty nanny.
Yeah. She's right. He's right, Brandy.
And when she hears this, it's going to drive her crazy, and that makes me, and I win.
Okay.
And by the way, he shows a picture to everyone.
Well, and by the way, you're the one here in about 10 minutes going to be pissing and moaning to get out of here, and you're prompting this one over here.
I'm just seeing if he has something to contribute to the story.
He always has something to contribute. He's third asshole guy. So, Claudia is a whore, and Claudia is also waiting tables.
She was a hardworking server who just happened to be in love with her boss.
All I hear is feedback right now coming out of you.
Slutbag.
So Harlan made it a point to meet and rub elbows.
Do not
with
slut
renowned...
shame her. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Why not? I slut shame you, and I know you.
Well, yeah, but that's different.
You're interrupting me.
She's
and
a fine
so
young lady.
So you don't
lady.
Get to piss and moan.
I'm just saying she's a fine young lady. She's working hard, working on her feet all day.
So Colonel Sanders made it a point to meet and rub elbows with renowned food critic Duncan Hines of Modern Cake Mix fame, who gave Sanders' place a glowing review in his travel book. It was around this time that Sanders met his beloved. Jesus Christ, how many beloveds does he have? Bertha.
This is different.
A beloved? Bertha. Another Bertha?
No, this is different.
How many Berthas we got in these shows?
Bertha was his nickname for his first pressure cooker, a new contraption that rapidly cooked vegetables using high temperatures and pressures. Sanders wondered whether this might be the key to frying chicken quickly without sacrificing quality. He added pressure relief valves to Bertha so it would be safe for frying, and spent years experimenting with various marinades, oils, temperatures, types of flour, and seasonings.
Yes, Colonel. He spent years developing this secret recipe that you scoff at.
And no, you know, he spent years developing it. My mama used to cook fried chicken on Sunday.
I know you told us, and it was better.
Take her like an hour.
Still don't give a pick.
I mean, she didn't need, I mean, what the fuck, years to cook fried chicken?
Yes.
Throw this on bitch in some grease and fry it up. Put some spices on it.
I'm sure it was the same chicken all the time. By July 1940, Sanders had developed a system to fry chicken to a golden brown in about 8 minutes. And he'd perfected his long-evolving spice spectrum by adding an 11th ingredient.
Yeah. Could your mother do that?
Yep.
He also invented a crackling gravy, which took...
Now we're talking.
Nobody made gravy like my mama.
Your mom couldn't make crackling gravy.
My mama had this cracked pepper in a gravy. Just the right amount, just the right thickness. Her gravy was smooth. Nary a lump in her gravy.
Is she dead?
Nary a lump.
Is she dead?
God rest her soul.
Then I don't give a damn.
Was it brown gravy?
Huh? It was white gravy.
Was there lumps?
And explain this
to me. Were
there
lumps in her gravy?
It was smooth. It was like, but tell me this. And I always wondered about this because this is where the Colonel fuck you hard. You go in there to the Colonel's place and you get the mashed potatoes and gravy. Motherfuckers give you beef gravy. Where they get beef gravy? That's what I want to know. Ain't no chicken gravy. Chicken gravy white.
Yes,
you go in there, you get beef gravy.
You do.
They fucked it. It was coming out. There was getting. It was instant gravy coming out of a powdered bag.
I do like their potatoes, though.
Ooh.
Please continue, Brandy.
Can you explain that to me? Can somebody explain why
I'm
getting beef gravy?
Do we look like we fucking work at Colonel Sanders' place?
Motherfucker don't serve a hamburger. There ain't no beef in there. Where are you getting?
We did not go to KFC University.
All I'm saying is you can't get any beef in a goddamn KFC, but all of a sudden you ask for mashed potatoes and they got beef gravy on it. How'd that happen? Where'd the beef gravy come from?
I think it's chicken gravy.
It ain't chicken gravy. Chicken gravy is white, goddammit.
It's not white.
Yes, it.
Chicken gravy is not white.
Oh, you don't know nothing about no goddamn gravy. Just go ahead.
Chicken gravy's not white.
You don't know your
it's
goddamn
like a really
gravy.
It's light brown, almost clear.
It ain't like that gravy you get in there.
No.
It's darker than chocolate.
It's like a broth.
It's not. You know what? That's because you're going to that West Side KFC where they haven't changed the grease out of anything since 1902.
Just go ahead with your story. You're wrong about you. You don't know nothing about gravy.
Motherfucker, I worked at Bob Evans. I know more about. I've forgotten more about
and what
gravy
was the cover
than you will ever know.
Okay, so I asked for some biscuits and gravy at Bob Evans, and it comes out. What's on my biscuit? Some white shit with some cracked pepper in it, like my mama used to make. Not as good as my mama used to make, but it's white. That's chicken gravy.
That's not chicken gravy.
It is chicken
it's
gravy.
It's not fucking chicken gravy.
You don't know a goddamn thing
I do.
About
that's
gravy.
Flour
motherfucker,
gravy.
You can't
that's
even
flour.
Find
it's
you,
made out of flour
you know
and
Dave
milk.
Had to drive, Dave had to draw you a map and get you a GPS to find a goddamn stove in your house.
What?
Now you telling me about gravy. You don't know nothing about no cooking. I know. I
you
do all the
high.
Cooking in my house.
Your first
you don't
of all,
know a goddamn
biscuits,
thing about cooking.
If you get gravy and biscuits, the biscuits they put on there or the gravy they put on there is flour and water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not,
and chicken juice.
No beef.
And chicken juice.
No chicken juice. No beef. No.
Yes.
It's not.
Yes. What then you don't have
okay,
no gravy?
Obviously, we're not going to be able to settle
Look,
this today.
Look, Julia, child. Shove it up your ass. I know what I'm talking about. Right. Wow.
Okay, let me ask you something.
You cannot.
When's the last time you even hit the broil on your stove? Do you even know what... You don't know no shit about cooking.
What the fuck do you know what I know about cooking?
I know how to cook.
Today we're going to make some alphabet soup. Oh.
What the fuck? Yeah, at least I got Chuck to shut the fuck up.
You know, she worked for the CIA. No,
she
no
did.
Shit. Yeah,
no, she
did.
Really did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was a cook. No, she worked for the CIA.
All right. He also invented a crackling gravy.
No, it was
shut
beef
the
gravy.
Fuck up. which took advantage of the bits of breading left in the oil after frying, and it was rumored to have been amongst the finest things one can put in one's mouth.
You know,
no, I've had plenty of good things in my mouth better than that gravy.
But
his what sort of things you put in your mouth?
Glitter poonane.
Now, you tell me, Timmy, you tell me. Did glitter that gravy candy, better than nanny. A breast?
No.
Better
no,
than a breast, no, sister. Nope. Not even a chicken breast.
It's not, no, not better than breast, not better than a vagina.
Not even better than a pretty girl's kiss, Timmy.
No. You're right.
That gravy ain't the best thing you put in your mouth. You know what? That gravy.
But you know what it was? It was chicken gravy.
It wasn't a goddamn chicken gravy.
I got it here on Wikipedia.
It's chicken gravy.
Yeah. It does bullshit. Gravipedia. Chicken gravy ain't brown.
Gravipedia. Just looking
Gravipedia?
Right, yeah.
You on Gravipedia?
Yeah.
Ain't no goddamn brown chicken gravy.
I hope that explodes all over you.
All right. Continue, Brandy. This is
jackass.
Silly. This is silly.
Well, but his discoveries would have to wait for the world to sort some things out. In the cold.
Remember when Dan Aykroyd did that?
Yes. Julia Child. Cut her finger off. Spectacular.
Julia Child on Saturday Night Live. Oh, God.
In funny. The cold of an early December Sunday afternoon in 1942.
Oh, I think I'm losing consciousness now. She cut her finger and blood was on her.
I like the Bass-O-Matic.
That was good.
Oh, the Bass-O-Matic was awesome.
Yeah.
Or when he did the Whammo toys and bag of glass.
Yeah, bag of glass.
All right. The Sanders family were sitting in Margaret's home listening to music on the radio when the broadcast was interrupted by a special news bulletin. An announcer informed listeners that Pearl Harbor was being bombed by the Empire of Japan. The United States was at war. At 52 years old, Sanders was too old to serve his country, but he could still serve a small portion of it. He left the restaurant in the care of his mistress, Claudia, and traveled all the way out to the remote town of Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where the government had hastily erected a sprawling state-of-the-art facility on what had previously been farmland.
You know, that's where the Oak Ridge boys are from.
Okay. Cerner,
Elmira.
Sanders.
Elmira.
Doesn't really have the same ring to it, does it?
Well, yeah. If you're a woman, you sing Elmira. If you're a man, you sing Elvira.
You know what you're going to be singing, though, one day? El Lanny. El Lanny.
My heart's on fire
for El Lanny, working at the Pep Boy. Living in the trailer.
I bet you that Atlanta could get some action if you guys decide to swing.
You know he could with that one arm.
You got that red, slick back, greasy hair.
Yep.
Women fall for that.
Oh, yeah, with that plaid shirt.
Remember when it was the thing not to wash your hair? Remember? Like in the 90s, it was a...
The grunge thing?
Yeah, the grunge thing.
Kurt Cobain and shit.
Yes, that's what Lanny... Lanny's still in that era.
Or his balls. He ain't gonna watch those either.
Sanders met up with his friend,
Joe Clemens,
the manager of a local cafeteria, and formally accepted a position as assistant manager.
If Lanny...
Although he worked there until nearly the end of the war... Sanders had no idea how the thousands of men and women of Oak Ridge spent their days.
Would fall right out.
They never openly discussed their work, even with the easygoing Sanders.
Yeah, so
only later would he learn that those workers were scientists and engineers, and that they'd been developing their own secret recipe, uranium-235.
Uranium.
No. They had spent years heating chunks of the metal to high temperatures and then pushing its vapors through through membranes, then spinning it into massive magnetic chambers. To isolate a few kilograms of the special isotope. In 1945, the stuff was packed into the Little Boy Bomb, loaded onto the Enola Gay, flown to Japan, and dropped on Hiroshima. It was the first atomic weapon ever deployed in war. In 1952, Harlan Sanders decided to visit Australia. Much had changed.
Can I just
in
interject something? No,
war.
This is important because it's bothered
and
me. No, this has bothered me for a long time. Timmy.
After 39 years.
And the floor recognizes Colonel Walters.
Is there anybody else who's disturbed by this whole Manhattan Project
that there might have been some unseemly things subconsciously behind it. They named the bomb Little Boy. It's flown by the Ebola Gay.
Ebola.
So Harlan.
But no, do you see a theme there, Timmy?
No, I don't.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I don't care.
They should have named the bomb Big Boy. Because you know what?
That is how he got that big chicken. Because you know that big chicken that's on that he puts on his restaurants? That, you know?
It's a victim of radiation.
Exactly.
I see.
He got it there at Oak Ridge.
It's Chickenzilla.
Yeah.
Harlan and Josephine had divorced after 39 years, and Sanders married his longtime employee and mistress, Claudia.
See, that's a mistake guys make. Mm-hmm. They divorce their wife, and then they marry their mistress.
Yeah, because not a bitch going to live for 50 more years.
Government Weatherby.
Then you got to go out and get a new mistress.
Yeah.
Governor Weatherby recommissioned him as a Kentucky colonel in honor of his cuisine. And this time, Sanders fully embraced the honorific.
See?
Oh, hold on.
There you go.
Excuse me?
This is the second time he's been named colonel. How many times have you been named colonel? How many times, Randy?
None.
Once by the Cajuns. And
let me say this.
I was not named colonel. I earned colonel. Do you know how many alligators you got to scalp? You got to bring back alligator scalps just to be a lieutenant. And it's like Mario, Super Mario, collecting the coins throughout the game.
He began introducing himself as Colonel Sanders and started to put together his signature look, growing a salt and pepper goatee and wearing black frock suits with a Kentucky-style string tie.
Do you think I should wear should have a goatee?
Uh-uh.
Why?
No.
Because it would distract from my face, is that what you're saying?
So much changing in his life, he thought he ought to change his vocabulary to match the Southern gentleman motif he was trying for.
Yeah, so should this one over here.
The elimination of profanity.
So who was he copying
this
off of?
This was why he
That's
was
what
traveling.
I want to know.
This is why he was traveling to Australia, where he hoped that a big religious conference could cure his habit. But he had to make a stop in Utah first. Oh, he went to my motherland.
Yes.
So he had to pick up 35 wives?
Well,
he went to Utah, and he did all of the Utah things.
Where?
Went to Salt Lake City.
Is that in here?
No, I'm making it up.
I know. Wearing some early iteration of his evolving ensemble, 62-year-old Colonel Sanders stepped off a train in Salt Lake City and went to the Dewdrop Inn.
Oh, man.
Every place got a Dewdrop Inn.
I know.
Yeah, there used to be one on
Utah. Do they even sell alcohol in Utah?
No. A newly renovated hamburger stand owned by Pete Harmon. Sanders had met Harmon at a restaurant convention in Chicago, and the colonel liked young Harmon at once, mostly because Harmon seemed to be the only other person at the convention who rejected alcohol.
Yeah, the colonel never drank. That colonel never drank.
Yeah. Sanders asked Harmon to give him a ride to a local grocer, and there the colonel acquired some frozen chickens and an armful of seasonings. He was planning to fry up a batch of the secret recipe chicken he had perfected prior to the war, hoping that Harmon would sign up to franchise the recipe. Franchising is still a novel concept, and Sanders' idea was to convince already established restaurants to add his chicken and gravy to their existing menus. They would subscribe to a pre-mixed herbs and spices service, paying a nickel a bird to gain access to the recipes and the techniques. The colonel cooked his chicken in Harmon's kitchen in a borrowed pressure cooker. Fried chicken was not a common entree around these parts in those days, so the Dewdrop crew were wary.
So he introduced your people to fried chicken.
He did. Sanders presented a large serving dish of his signature chicken. They looked at it as though it were a heap of ambiguously seasoned dinosaur descendants. They ate it, but they didn't seem to know what to make of it.
Of dinosaur descendants.
Yeah.
You like
now that was classic, Timmy. That was some literature right there.
You like that,
yeah.
Bro?
Oh, yeah.
They ate it, but they didn't seem to know what to make of it. Colonel Sanders got back on the train and headed to San Francisco to catch his flight to Australia. 2 weeks later, on his way back home, Claudia rendezvoused with her husband in San Francisco, and Sanders decided she ought to see Pete Harmon's new place. They disembarked from the train in Salt Lake and headed to the Dewdrop, and there they were confronted with a massive sign painted in the large window reading Kentucky Fried Chicken. Something new, something different. I'll be goddamn, Sanders said. The convention in Australia hadn't helped. Sneaky Pete Harmon had evidently cataloged the 11 secret ingredients that the colonel had purchased.
Sneaky Pete.
And he had reverse engineered the pressure frying process. The name Kentucky Fried Chicken came from the sign painter who suggested it when Harmon was unsure how to refer to the colonel's creation. Somehow, Sanders was not infuriated by this apparent underhandedness, or at least that was the story eventually agreed upon. With the surprise reappearance of the colonel, Harmon agreed to officially franchise the first person to do so, and Sanders laid claim to the name Kentucky Fried Chicken. They sealed the deal with a handshake. Harmon soon invented the infamous bucket meal and opened additional locations.
You know what? I would want that in writing if I was the colonel.
Fuck yeah.
Well, is this my part?
Yeah, please continue. Well,
you know what, Timmy? Mm-hmm. This sumbitch ain't worthy of my attention.
Come on, Colonel.
No,
on.
I do
you
not got, believe
you
got I to
respect your fellow Colonel.
I'm doing this under protest.
All right,
Timmy.
Noted.
It's now, noted.
Within 5 years, his annual restaurant revenue multiplied 20-fold.
That's a lot. That's a lot, Colonel.
That's like if you got $1, later you got 20.
Yeah.
Devil. 20-fold means exponentially times 20.
She did well in economics.
She did. Well, I don't know if she learned economics, but she did well in economics. But anyway, in 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed the National Interstate and Defense Highways Act.
Okay.
Authorizing the expenditure of $25 billion to construct over 40,000 miles of interstate highway system. This was to be the largest public works project America had ever seen. Now, Timmy, here's just a side note here, and I'll wrap this, not wrap it up, but do you know why he built the highway system, Timmy?
Yes, yeah, so during the war, airplanes could land.
And the military could get around quickly.
The Cold War.
Yes, so the military could move around the country, and people think it was for us. It's first for the military, second for commerce, and third for us.
Yeah, and also for planes that needed to
land anywhere mm-hmm. they could. Mm-hmm. Now, the Sanders Hotel and Restaurant Complex was already struggling. The state had relocated a key junction on Route 25, and Sanders' location was no longer convenient for travelers. But the colonel knew, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he was in serious trouble when the newspaper published the surveyed routes for these newfangled freeways. Interstate 75, which runs right by our city, mm-hmm. fast city here, Timmy, mm-hmm. would replace 25 as the local traffic artery. But it would pass 7 miles outside of town, Timmy.
Not near his restaurant.
No, and with the irrecoverable loss of passerby, Sanders sold the property for a fraction of what had been worth a year earlier.
Mm.
He was not good timing there. At age 66, Harlan Sanders was back to square one with no income apart from a few franchise fees and $100 a month he was stealing from Social Security,
not
Timmy.
Not stealing. He was getting Social Security, but he was basically...
Social Security is just a form of wealth redistribution, anyway. So he was stealing it from people who have money, Timmy.
No, he paid into Social Security. So you're saying at age 66, he was pretty much broke.
He was broke. He got $105 a month, so... Now, he began courting chicken franchisees in earnest. He would drive to a town with good prospects, park his automobile on the outskirts, and spend the night asleep in the back seat.
At 66 years old.
66. He brought with him everything he needed to demonstrate this process. An icebox full of chickens, cake flour, this newly patented pressure cooker, boxes of pre-mixed spices, vegetable oil, fire extinguishers, and beef gravy.
No fucking beef gravy.
He fried his chicken for the staffs of receptive restaurants, and if they took a shine to it, he cooked the quantity for customers. He would then stroll through the restaurant, inquiring how diners were enjoying their meals. Dressed in his fully formed fake colonel regalia.
His white suit, his little tie.
A silver goatee, black string tie, a cane, which he did not need.
He's 66 years old.
A pristine white suit, just like back in his railroad days. Now, one restaurant decided to franchise early was the Hobby House in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hmm.
There, Colonel Sanders befriended head cook Dave Thomas.
Of Wendy's?
The seasoned veteran took young Thomas under his wing, providing the novice with sage advice and mentoring him in the ways of the restaurant. He was the restaurant whisperer.
clearly Thomas not, because he was out of a job.
Would go on to manage several Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises, and then later founded his own franchise, a hamburger chain called Wendy's that has enjoyed some success.
Absolutely.
Just a little bit.
I would say he did better than the Colonel. You know why? Because Dave was not a fake douchebag Colonel.
Continue, Colonel.
So, Colonel Sanders' business grew in trials and as and in fits and starts. The work was taxing for the almost 70-year-old Sanders, causing considerable cantankerousness. One unknown morning in some unknown town, well, do we even know this happened? He and Claudia stopped at a diner for some breakfast. When the waitress set the Colonel's plate before him, he blanched at the flaccid, undercooked eggs, Timmy.
Nothing will piss off a Colonel more than undercooked eggs, Brandy.
Ain't nothing piss off a Colonel more than flaccid. That Colonel don't want nothing to do with flaccid. But you know what? That Colonel was flaccid all the time.
Here's a little advice. If you're going to send women dick pics, don't send them flaccid penises. Would you agree with that, Brandy?
I do not ever want a dick pic.
I'm just saying, if you're going to send one, make sure it's
it's in its glory. Please do.
See, I send mine flaccid because it's hard to get a shot of the whole thing.
Continue.
I just imagine.
You have to
this.
Do it in panorama.
I do. I just say imagine this with. Actually, I can't get. I keep sending them belly shots. Because when I point down, all you're seeing is my belly. You ain't seeing nothing else.
Clearly.
But
oh, that's so gross. Continue, Colonel.
So now he's got these flaccid eggs in front of him, these unerect eggs. And he says, Miss, not once in my life have I been drunk enough to eat eggs as raw as this. And I asked that they be turned over. That's right, you did, she said, and I'll take them right back. She was gone for a few moments and then returned with the plate. The eggs indeed looked more thoroughly cooked, though the colonel reckoned this to be a physical impossibility given the time that had elapsed. He flipped the eggs over and confirmed his suspicion.
What was going on?
One side was still untouched by the grill. The cook had merely turned the eggs over on the plate.
Well, he said he wanted them.
He said he wanted them turned over, yeah. In the kitchen, the cook was sitting on a table smoking a cigarette when the double swinging doors burst open to reveal a curiously dressed man to me. The intruder was wearing a white linen suit, black string tie, a silver goatee, had a breakfast plate in his hand, and said, "You son of a bitch, you think you're smart turning those eggs over on my plate."
Poor guy's probably working for minimum wage.
Well, Mel says, "Don't call me a son of a bitch. Get out of my kitchen." "I'll just do that," Colonel Sanders said, tipping the eggs from the plate onto his upturned palm. "And leave your eggs with you." The colonel cocked his arm back and projected the fistful of breakfast at the object of his scorn. Now this is beautiful, Timmy. Beautiful, I gotta tell you. And now I'm gonna read this again just so you get the full thing. Colonel Sanders cocked his arm back and projected the fistful of breakfast at the object of his scorn, like a wizard casting a poultry hex. Now that is some poetry right there, you listeners, you sons of bitches. If five of you don't go give Timmy a 5-star review for his writing right now, you ain't worth a goddamn.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Colonel.
Jesus Christ.
A wizard casting a poultry hex. Now, that's beautiful, Timmy. I got to tell you, that's beautiful.
Thank you, Colonel.
Now, the egg sailed, egg-like, of course, across the expanse between them.
Like that, across the expanse?
Now listen, it's just, now, I want you to stop what you're doing. If you're doing two things at one time here, stop what you're doing, and I want you to focus on this. The egg sailed, egg-like, across the expanse between them. The floppy projectile struck the cook dead in the center of his chest in a spattering burst of raw yellow yolk. Now, back at her table. Now, how is that? I mean, that if Bob Ross, Goddamn Michelangelo could not paint a picture like that.
I'm sure.
I mean,
people,
Timmy, you could. You
I'm sure people
could, you
can hear my eyes
the
rolling.
Sistine Chapel with this writing right here.
Well,
Timmy.
Colonel, you know, it's a lot of work, but it's, our listeners deserve the best.
It's beautiful, Timmy. It's beautiful. I mean, look at me, Timmy, right here. You see that little tear coming down my eye?
He does have a tear brain.
You touch me, Timmy. You touch me. I got to tell you.
In your dirty spot?
show the doctor.
So
he
hits this guy in the face with some eggs.
Yeah.
All right.
Back at the table, Claudia was startled as the kitchen doors buzzed outward and her husband backed quickly out into the dining area. He was holding a small stool in a defensive posture and shouting at the yolk-soaked cook, who emerged from the kitchen with a knife in his hand.
See?
The grill man eventually gave up his attack.
Don't take eggs to a knife fight.
You know what? Harlan cannot just go around running his yapper at everybody and not expect people to get a little pissy.
Well,
the guy's turned over his eggs.
Yeah, that was kind of a dick move. So the grill man eventually gave up his attack and returned to the kitchen, having accomplished his intended intimidation. The colonel returned his stool to the floor, and he and Claudia decided that they probably ought to take that dining experience elsewhere.
Probably.
Despite the slow initial progress in signing up, franchisees, interest in Kentucky Fried Chicken began to improve in the late 50s and early 60s. Word had gotten out regarding Pete Harmon's success, Sneaky Pete. By then, he was doing a brisk business at multiple locations. Colonel Sanders' company had also launched a number of innovative carryout locations which omitted the dining area. The food was packed into boxes and buckets so customers could easily take it home for dinner, and the concept was proving very popular, Timmy.
Nice. I've been to the original KFC.
Now, the colonel's meticulous attire and twinkly-eyed charm helped him gain a foothold via organic marketing. He began to visit local radio stations to tell his story, and he occasionally appeared on a television talk shows and the like. His face and signature string tie were appearing in increasingly numerous signs and food packages, and people began to recognize him in public. In 1962, there were hundreds of restaurants in North America sending fees to the 72-year-old Sanders. Most of the deals sealed with just a handshake and maintained on the honor system. Franchise applicants eventually became so numerous that Sanders no longer went out to meet them. Rather, he cordially summoned them to his estate in Shelbyville, Kentucky, which I have been to.
Of course you have.
Yeah, well, he invited me over a few times. He was trying to impress the other colonels, but we wasn't impressed. It was a nice place, but he's still not a real colonel. Now, in October of 1963, Sanders sold Kentucky Fried Chicken to a young lawyer, John Y. Brown, for $2 million.
Oh, man.
The compromises at the new Kentucky Fried Chicken, Inc. began almost immediately.
Can you imagine having KFC and selling it for $2 million?
Well, that was a lot of scratch back in 1963.
Yeah, not for that franchise.
No, not for that franchise. Now, the company bought out many of... Now, once John Brown's got this, they'd start buying the existing franchise and ordered the remaining owners to conform. They must remove their own menu items, rename their restaurant Kentucky Fried Chicken, update the decor to red and striped corporate branding, use signage and packaging featuring the colonel's face. The new advertising campaign was indeed aggressive and financially successful. The colonel appeared personally in TV commercials as well as the Johnny Carson show, Timmy.
Nice.
He was on there with Burt Reynolds and Angie, what was her name? Angie Dickinson.
Yeah, policewoman. But you know what he didn't have? He didn't have a podcast like you,
Colonel. He did not have a podcast. He even showed up with Lawrence Welk one time.
Bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Although Sanders was uneasy with some of the changes being made within the company, but he was paid to be the goodwill ambassador, so he spread goodwill. By the early 70s, Colonel Sanders was informed that Kentucky Fried Chicken had sold, Kentucky Fried Chicken and its 3,500-plus franchises had been acquired by Hublin, a company best known for distributing Smirnoff Vodka.
He didn't like that.
He had spent his entire life rallying against liquor, although he didn't mind whoring around, so he's kind of a hypocrite, too.
No, he just didn't believe in the drink.
But this was an insufferable affront. Once the $285 million buyout was complete, the company flush with new millionaires. Company was flush with new millionaires. But Colonel was not among them. That dumb sumbitch held no stock at all. Yeah, Harlan was diagnosed with acute leukemia in 1980, and he died at Jewish Hospital in Louisville of pneumonia on December 16, 1980, at the age of 90 years old. He lived a good life. His body lay in state at the rotunda at his Kentucky State Capitol in Frankfort. His funeral service was attended by more than 1,000 people. He was buried in his characteristic white suit and black Western string tie in Cave Hill Cemetery in Louisville. The governor of Kentucky, guess who this is, Timmy?
John Brown.
John Y. Brown, same guy that fucked the colonel.
He was married to a former Miss America.
Miss America.
Yeah.
He gave the eulogy at the funeral.
Nice.
So he banged him and buried him.
You know what? It's a shame because, he made $2 million and that's something, but from what that franchise is worth, he really did not fare very well.
Nah, but who cares? He was a prick.
No, he was not.
He was a fake
Brandy,
colonel.
Brandy, your
He's
final
bogus.
Thoughts, Brandy, on...
Colonel was a bit of a prick.
Colonel Harlan David Sanders.
He was a bit of a prick.
What do you mean he was a prick? He was. He helped the poor. He's a badass. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have known many colonels in my day, and you, sir, Colonel Sanders, are no colonel.
Well, he's dead. Show some respect. For people fake talking about you when you're dead.
Oh, they're going to talk about me. Talking about me when
now,
I'm alive.
Now, Brandy, Norm MacDonald is the colonel.
I know, well, there's different ones.
I don't like Norm MacDonald as the
There's
colonel.
Different ones.
Norm MacDonald should not be the colonel.
I know, but there's different ones.
I would rather have this guy over here be the colonel than Norm MacDonald. Your final thoughts, Brandy?
I'd like to see Scarlett Johansson be the colonel. In a sexy white little...
You know, she has the sexiest voice.
She's just sexy as hell.
I know. Brandy, what's your final...
I told you my final thoughts. He was a dick.
I
said good day!
What the... I don't know what you want me to elaborate on that.
Colonel, your final thoughts on Colonel Harlan David Sanders.
The colonel was a good man. He was a good representative to colonels everywhere.
What do you think about Norm MacDonald posing as Colonel Sanders?
He's a poor man's Colonel Sanders.
Okay.
But he's funny, so I take that. But, you know.
All right.
There's two different kind of colonels in the world. The colonels that are made colonels by, you know, Cajun
Jesus
colonels.
Jesus Christ, turn the page.
You got the military colonels, you got the honorary colonels, right. And you got the Cajun colonels.
Turn the page.
The Cajun colonels are the ones that are the most respected.
Turn the page.
We don't dress any particular way. We're secret. We're amongst you, but you don't know it.
I see. Brandy, any final thoughts?
Jesus Christ, how many more times are you going to ask
Jesus
me for
Christ,
final thoughts?
Jesus Christ, Dr. Dementia, you going
to
have...
Fucking Jerry Springer over there is wanting me to give a monologue for final thoughts.
All right, I guess that's it then. It's been fun, guys. I've enjoyed our time here together. Brandy, you have any nice things to say about me?
No.
The Colonel, do you have any nice things to say about
Timmy,
me?
That was one of the most beautifully written scripts I have ever run across in my entire
life. Thank you.
I was talking to a listener the other day, and they was talking about the scripts, and they said, you know, between your insights, you know, they was talking about me, between your insights and Timmy's brilliant writing, you know, there's no reason you couldn't be bigger than, you know, I don't know, what's the biggest podcast? NPR.
Yeah, they walk among us.
They walk among us. That, well, you know what? We could never be like Ben, no. We could never be like Ben. No.
Jesus Christ.
It's just that devil sheet of ball and chain holding you back.
All right, thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.